what's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. 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 What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
What should you want to know? Don't you mind about the future?
Hello, listeners. I'm joined today in my apartment by Jimmy Pardo, who is, of course, the host of the very popular podcast Never Not Funny. He also works with Conan O'Brien. He's a star of television and films. Jimmy, thank you so much for coming to my apartment.
My pleasure. Star of television and films seems extreme, but thank you.
Well, yeah, I like to talk people up.
Sure.
We should probably put this in context. You came to Northridge, to where I live.
Yes.
It took longer than you thought it would.
Yes.
And you're enraged.
I am not as angry as I pretended to be on the telephone.
Okay, good.
I had a nice chat with a friend on the drive up. We talked about Jesus Christ Superstar for 45 minutes, and now I'm here.
Excellent. Well, that'll lead right into the first topic of conversation then.
Okay, go.
Are you a fan of Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yes, my favorite musical.
It is. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in it?
No, but for some reason, on my my Wikipedia page, which any jackass can update... somebody posted that I'm currently studying to play the role of Annas. Annas? A-N-N-A-S. But I'm not. No. I do love the musical. I've never been in it. I don't have the pipes to be in that musical. I could only dream.
Well, that's interesting because the people, regular listeners to your podcast will know that you have a proclivity to burst into song.
Yes.
When the mood strikes you.
Yes.
And very often those will be show tunes.
I think, though, if I'm breaking into tune on a comedy podcast, I think it's... the lack of talent's excused. I think if one shows up to audition for the role of Pontius Pilate, that maybe you should be better than what I have to offer. Although I would love it. If somebody came to me one day and said, look, we don't care how good or bad you are, we want you to play Judas.
Right.
I would do it in a heartbeat, and I would suck, and I would be... I wouldn't... You know what would happen? And I apologize for this long answer. I would end up trying too hard to be good instead of just accepting, hey, they cast you for fun.
Right.
Enjoy this. I would try too hard to be a good singer, and then that would stink.
Yeah. Years ago, I was privileged to see a touring production of Jerry Lewis in Damn Yankees.
Yes.
And the thing about it was, there were people complaining, oh, it wasn't a very good production of Damn Yankees. Well, it wasn't a production of Damn Yankees. It was a production of Jerry Lewis in Damn Yankees. That was the title of the show.
Right.
So there you go. It would be Jimmy Pardo in Jesus Christ Superstar. That's a draw.
Well, for eight people. Well, and then everybody else would wonder why the hell it's happening.
Yeah.
I did see a Superstar back in the, maybe 1990, where it was the first time that Ted Neely and Carl Anderson had reunited after the movie. And Irene Cara played Mary, and Dennis DeYoung from Styx played Pontius Pilate.
Wow.
And then there was one other person in there, one other oddball kind of rock star, and it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. And then I saw Ted Neely do it again last year. And he's 70, playing young Jesus Christ, and...
Does he still have it?
No.
No.
No. I mean, he does to a point, but, when he's got to hit some of the notes in Gethsemane, it's like, oh, come on! Oh! He didn't get it. Okay.
But you were rooting for him.
I was rooting the entire show.
I want to put some things into context.
Go. I went off on JC Superstar.
Hey, I'm not going to stop you if you want to go someplace. But I usually like to talk to people and get a sense of how old were you, do you think, when you first performed in front of people?
Oh, geez. I was the first time I ever performed in front of people. Like, it would have to be grade school, obviously. I guess I was in the choir as soon as, like, third grade. You know, you had to get up and, your class had to sing some pop tune in a choral arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was probably sixth grade. So what does that make you, 12? When I, had my first quote-unquote solo or, thought about, trying out for the lead in the play, that sort of thing. Probably 12.
Okay. Do you remember what the play was when you tried out the first time?
It was, we didn't, our grade school, I'm kind of going to contradict a little bit, but our grade school didn't do plays. We just did like highlights from the plays. So like if we did West Side Story, we did the five best known songs from West Side Story, and then maybe five songs from Grease.
Mm.
So it was it West Side Story? I know Grease was in eighth grade because I sang. I was the Danny Zuko.
Uh-huh.
And but I was not originally cast as Danny Zuko. I was cast as a almost kind of just like an extra, just kind of one of the guys. Mm. Not even I wasn't even one of the Thunderbirds. Is that what they're called in Grease?
Yes.
But I think it was West Side Story was in sixth grade, and then seventh grade was something else where I was the star. And then when I didn't get Danny Zuko in eighth grade, I remember really being bent out of shape and kind of pouting about it and acting like I wasn't one of these, you know, toddlers and tiaras. I wasn't one of those crazy with a stage mom or whatever. I just remember going, oh, what happened here? I thought I was the guy.
Yeah.
We can't, you know, that guy's already good in football. Why is he now able to sing? He's probably a better singer than me. I mean, I'll give it. His name was Fred Sandoval.
Ah.
Fred Sandoval.
These things stay with you.
They do. And then I think he may have been expelled from school.
Oh.
And then I believe Barry Nelson got the part. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't even second choice. Mm-hmm. And then Barry might have also been expelled from school.
So this was a rough neighborhood.
It wasn't. These were like two of the four kids that were rough.
But they wanted to perform.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then, maybe they wanted to because it was Grease and they got to wear a leather jacket. And then, I eventually got the part and it was exciting.
So did you have to scramble to prepare, do you remember?
It was very last minute. It was very last minute. I don't know if I scrambled. I think it was at the time when Grease was on everybody's mind, you know, maybe a year or two later since they were able to get the rights to it. Mm-hmm. After the movie came out, but everybody knew the words to Summer Lovin', you know, and Grease Lightning. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
So then, is that around the time when you thought, hey, this, you know, performing thing is something I really like, I want to pursue it? Or?
Oh, yeah. It was, you know, I lived in the south side of Chicago. You didn't think it was realistic. You know, you thought, you know, you did plays, and then you go on with, you know, in high school, and then you move on with your life, and, you know, you don't pursue a career in it.
No.
You know?
When did you make the shift from, like, theatrical musical to rock band?
I always wanted to be in a rock band.
Right.
Always. I mean, even in eighth grade, it's one of those things, it's funny you ask that. It was my birthday party. I was born in July 28th, so it had to be seventh grade into eighth grade. We went to a place called Barnaby's Pizza, mm-hmm. and they had a band up there, a couple of, you know, guys, and maybe a banjo, and a keyboard, and a drum, or whatever. And when we went back, we were driving home, I turned to my friends in my dad's station wagon. I said, we should start a band. And my friend Chris O'Donnell at the time went, well, we were all waiting until that sentence came out. Everybody was like, I just could imagine them going, how long do you think before Pardo says, let's start a band? And so to this day, that haunts me. Like, being that guy. And again, I played no instrument, barely could sing. They played no instruments. I don't know why I thought starting a band was a good idea. And then there was another fellow named Mike DiBenedetto, who was a great drummer in eighth grade. I, again, had no talent. And I remember going up to him one day and saying, I'm going to start taking guitar lessons. Let's start a band. Mm. And he went, great. And then walked away, probably with a thought bubble of, that will never happen. You don't know how to play. Why do you think a band is a good idea? But I always wanted to be in a band, and be, you know, specifically Kiss. Mm-hmm. Wanted to be in Kiss.
Right.
And then when I got to high school, I did the theater and all that. And then between sophomore year and junior year, I finally started that band with a group of guys who were kind enough to keep me around longer than they ever should have.
Yeah. Well, that was nice. Did you find then that the band took your attention away from the theater?
No.
So you found time for both?
Oh, yeah. It was... the band was, form a sentence, professional entertainer. Theater in school was part of school, you know, and then the band, what the band did do was take me away from the golf team. And so I did not make the golf team my junior year, mainly because I did not get along with the coach, but I also did not work on my game at all in the summer. Summer of 82. I spent the entire, every day we rehearsed, the band would rehearse for some shows that were never getting booked. But every day we went out to somebody's garage, you know, we took turns. Every month was at somebody else's house, so our parents wouldn't kill us.
All right.
And, you know, but so that, it affected my golf I was no longer on the golf team, but I still did theater.
So did the band play original songs, or was it all covers?
It was mostly covers, with the exception of a song called Countdown, which was basically them just jamming blues. They were just jamming. You know, maybe with the bass, and then the guitarist was probably soloing over that, the drummer keeping probably a steady 3-4 time, and then me doing some horrible, horrible blues vocals over it. That was the only original we did. No, we did another one which was instrumental.
Okay.
Because I think they figured out, we need to keep him out of this. We need to keep, he's the leader of the band, but even he shouldn't be part of this.
So you were officially the leader?
I think so. I think I was the leader of the band in the sense of I was the guy calling the venues to try to get booked. Mm-hmm. And I think this guy, Paul Boyev, who is now a doctor, he would have been the leader musically. Mm-hmm. But I was the Reuben Kincaid, if Reuben Kincaid was singing with the Partridges.
Sure.
I was that guy, kind of a manager slash lead singer.
Yeah. All right. Well, that sounds good. Well, you were the one with the drive and the ambition.
I was.
Yeah.
I was the guy willing to make those dumb phone calls.
All right. So then let's take it back then to the theater, though. What was your high school theater experience like? Did you do more musicals, straight plays?
They did. My high school, sadly, was very much a jock high school. Mm-hmm. And so my first year... Like, they did the Fantastics the year before I got to that high school. My first one was Bye Bye Birdie, and they had, for whatever budgetary or lack of interest, they got rid of the fall play, which was usually the drama, and then the big musical was in the spring. Well, they got rid of the drama, and so now it was just this Bye Bye Birdie was the big musical, and I got cast as Randolph McAfee, which was the 12-year-old boy, and might have been 9, and I was, a freshman in high school. Playing the little boy role, and might have been 6. I don't know how old the kid was. Now that I think about it, but I remember it being, yeah. But somebody had to play something. Somebody played an old man. You know what I mean? It's high school. Nobody ever thinks about that sort of thing. I didn't set out to get the role of Conrad Birdie. Maybe Hugo Peabody, is that his name?
I believe so. That sounds about right.
Might have wanted to play Hugo. Probably thought I had a shot at that. But in reality, when the senior Terry Beasley was the kid's name. Had a better voice than me.
Yeah.
Had done 4 years of theater at the school. Maybe he should have one of the leads. So I was in that.
Well, Randolph's not a bad part. There's laughs there.
There's laughs.
Yeah.
And then that's where I think I kind of figured out I'm gonna forever be that guy.
Yeah.
The sort of non singing, maybe a couple line comic relief role will be my part in these musicals. And then we did Anything Goes my sophomore year, and where I played the old man. I played Mr. Whitney, want to say is the guy's name.
He's the dude that ends up with Reno. They do the whole...
No, that's Moon. That's the gangster.
The gangster.
Mr. Whitney, I think, was Billy's manager.
Right. He's sort of... Okay, I'm getting my characters mixed up.
Is Billy
up.
A character?
Yeah, Billy's the main guy. I'm thinking of like a guy who's sort of a stiff... He's originally engaged to Hope or something.
No. This was the old man.
Oh, okay.
This was the, it opens up the show. Steward!
Got it.
And I've got my bags and I'm yelling at people and I've got,
Did you have the opening line?
I think.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't it? Isn't that the opening line of
Could
the show?
Could very well be. I haven't seen it since the high school that I went to did it, so.
I think if it's not the opening line, it's the, certainly my first two lines. But I think that's what opens, that's what sets up that it's on a boat.
Yeah.
I think.
Right.
And I was funny. I remember getting a lot of laughs. I remember singing horribly. I wish I could remember I do end up with some woman at the end of it. Some aristocrat.
Ah.
Some high-end lady on the boat. Hmm. And it was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
What kind of production value were they able to have?
At the time I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm sure if I looked at photographs now, it probably looks exactly what it was flat boards and with paint.
Yeah.
But I do remember at the time being very impressed by the people that built the sets of, that they one half would be the interior of a cabin, and then they'd spin it around and it'd be the balcony of the ship. Like, they were able to do all that, and I thought that was pretty impressive for a high school you know, a tech crew to put together, a bunch of, you know, other 15-year-old kids.
Right.
There
wasn't much crossover then between the performers and the crew?
No. No, which is interesting considering they were begging people for, you know, to be in the shows.
Yeah.
But these were the guys that, I don't think they, maybe they did want to and they just weren't, I don't know. I don't know the history of if they wanted to be in it or not. But the production, I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing poor production values, but as good as we could do.
Right.
I don't know.
It wasn't flashy. It wasn't like the school. Obviously, if they were cutting out the drama, the school didn't have a lot of money to throw at the arts.
Exactly.
So,
but I do remember that, like, not remember. If you look at the yearbook and they show the photos, you know, and I've spun it to where they were obviously trying to teach us about the theater, as opposed to actually trying to make it look good at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we had way too much makeup on. And, like, not only did we have, like, if I was an old man, you know, the black for the crow's feet, they put the white underneath it so the light would catch it.
Yeah.
But nobody's more than 20 feet away from us, so you see, it kind of looks like crazy kabuki makeup more than, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, again, I spun it to where it's, they, I think they all meant well. Mm-hmm. It just was crazy that why are we so caked up?
Do you feel like you learned about
yeah.
the theater?
Oh, yeah, I do. Specifically, two people. A guy named Stephen Page was the choral director, and he directed Bye Bye Birdie. And then the second year Anything Goes, a woman named Linda Deutsch, who was my favorite teacher all through high school, she directed that, and she had directed previous shows before I got to that school, and then she directed the dramas that we ended up doing my junior and senior year. She taught me a lot. She taught me a lot. Now, in fact, I just, not just, it's over a year ago now, connected with her via classmates.com.
Oh.
And I had been looking for her since 1984.
Hmm.
And then I found her, and we sent a couple of exchanges, and then maybe I gave too much information, but she never wrote back.
Oh.
And I was kind of bummed
yeah.
that she never wrote back, but I maybe I got lost, and she thinks I never wrote her back. Who knows? But I just felt I was thrilled to be able to reconnect with this woman who had meant so much to me over these 4 years and say, you know, I don't know if you remember me, you know, you had thousands of students, you know, I had 12 teachers, right. I'm going to remember the one that I cared about, but in case you don't know, I've actually done pretty well. I actually have gone, moved to Hollywood, and I've appeared on TV and TV shows, yeah. And I kind of just wanted to let her know that, and when her response was one of, you know, she was proud, and it was, I even wrote back to her, it's crazy how a person I haven't seen in 20 years telling me that they're proud of me, you know, can mean so much, you know, and so yes, I did learn.
Well, that's good. Are there any, like, specific directions or pieces of instruction that you got that stick out in your
mind?
Boy,
that's interesting.
Things that you always say, okay, this is what performing is. This is what you do when you're acting on stage, or this is what you should never do when you're acting on stage, that kind of thing.
You know, I mean, I don't know if there's anything that, I learned the basics upstage down, you know, don't upstage somebody,
yeah.
which to this day, you know, like, whenever somebody does upstage, it's like, how did you not learn that? You know, like, if I'm doing something at a local theater, not a play, but like, even a quick sketch or something, that I might get tossed into, or even if I'm just doing stand-up and I'm talking to the other guy on stage, it's like, why are you standing two steps higher than me, you know, upstage? Why don't you, how did you not learn this? So that always pops in my head. And a thing with the these aforementioned Linda Deutsch and Stephen Page, I remember one rehearsal we were not giving our all. We were doing... oh, some mystery thing. I forget, but I will never pull the name of the show. It was a fun mystery.
Yeah.
And I.
But play. All mysteries are kind of a staple of high school
right.
theater.
Right. They all are. Right. I mean, it's. I forget which one it was. I played the bumbling Sherlock Holmesian sort of guy who again got laughs and then my love interest was this other like a sort of a Angela Lansbury Murder, She Wrote character, and the two of them get together to solve the crime. But I remember one time we were just kind of, it was a huge role for me, because up until that point I'd done these smaller comedic roles, and this was the lead, and I remember one rehearsal, I didn't know my lines, I hadn't done my work that I was supposed to do, And so I kind of was mumbling to cover the fact that I didn't know the lines. And Linda Deutsch was like, project! And I started to be an asshole, and I, pardon my language, to be a jerk. I started yelling my lines, and Stephen Page came down on me so hard, like, you know, that's not projecting, you're yelling, you know, and so now whenever somebody says project, like that image, that comes into my head, and then the idea of projecting, mm-hmm. I may have learned it more that day than any other day, you know, so... God, my answers are long-winded and get around to no point. Go ahead.
Hey, no, it works fine for me. It keeps me from having to come up with the next question.
Oh.
Do you think that, because I've had the privilege of having a couple of comedians on that I really admire.
Okay.
And I usually ask, you know, do you feel like your experience in theater then prepared you for being a comedian, or did you find the skills overlap?
I think so. I mean, and the fact that I always had the comedic role.
Mm-hmm.
Even when we did Whose Life Is It Anyway? I got the attorney role that might have had the two comedic lines in it, you know, the two funny lines, I think they hold the trial in his hospital room, isn't that possible?
I'm actually not that familiar with the show.
It's it's heavy, and I believe that was also a high school staple in the 80s. High schools didn't get the rights to 12 plays back then. I remember I was interrogating a witness or whatever, and I had a cup of coffee in my hand for whatever reason, and I went, fair enough. And I remember the audience just breaking up at that, and to this day, I might not even know why it's funny. I think it was maybe just the way I delivered it,
right.
But I remember in my head going, that's not supposed to be a funny line, but fair enough.
Yeah.
And with my ridiculous clipped patter. So I would imagine it trained me, you know, to do comedy. You know, I mean, obviously, it's what I wanted to do. So, I'll say yes.
Right. My experience has been that, like, most people, by the time they're doing comedy with any sort of regularity, they're past being self-conscious. So, you know, did you get stage fright a lot, or did you ever...
Doing plays?
Doing plays, yeah.
No.
No?
No.
What about when you first started stand-up?
Yeah, no, not when I first started. When I first started getting paid, and I talk about this ad nauseum, sadly, when I first started getting paid, I started getting stage fright. Mm-hmm. And then I would get stage fright whenever there was a showcase of some sort. You know, the guy from The Tonight Show is here, and then, tighten up, and then, of course, you're not funny.
Yeah. You'd rather just not know when that's going on?
Ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ever. I would just... And that's still true for any auditioning that I do. I'm a horrible auditioner. I don't think I was in high school when it didn't matter, but now in my head, if I think it matters, you know, I kind of get a little tight. Mm-hmm. But I never had any stage fright. I just, you know, I was a kid. I didn't know, you know what I mean? I didn't know. And I guess I was quick enough that if I fumbled the line, I could cover. I don't remember doing it, but I do remember people talking about it and going, oh, if you just saved us out there. I'm like, okay. I have no memory of it, but okay.
Yeah. So now, like I say, you've demonstrated over and over that you are a fan of musical theater.
Yes.
And you say Jesus Christ Superstar is your favorite?
Yeah.
What are the other ones that are up at the top of the list?
Evita.
Yeah.
I love, obviously, apparently I'm a big Lloyd Webber fan.
I was going to mention,
But I think it might end there.
Hmm.
Would it? Yeah, maybe.
Phantom of the Opera?
I do like the first act of Phantom I like. The first act I enjoy. I can't enjoy Phantom anymore ever since my wife pointed out that most of the musical is Christine! Christine! Yeah. And ever since that, it's like, oh boy, it does stink.
Yeah.
But I think Music of the Night's a good song, as is Phantom of the Opera. And there's one more. There's three really great songs.
Masquerade?
You know what? I don't dislike Masquerade. Yeah. Masquerade! Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again, I think, is a good song. There's one more, though. There's one more that the Phantom sings. He sings Music of the Night.
Angel of Music?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And those are all in the first act, if I'm not mistaken.
Pretty much.
And then Masquerade opens the act two. Yeah. And then I think it just kind of...
Yeah.
I think it goes downhill, in my opinion. Evita, I love. That was the first, may have been the first professional musical I ever saw.
Oh, really?
I think the guy that played Che was a guy named John Herrera. I could be wrong. I believe that's who played it. And maybe a Julie Covington played Ava. Could be way off, could be exactly on.
And where would you have seen that? Would that be a touring production?
At the Schubert Theater in Chicago.
Okay.
Yes. But I do remember the commercials for Evita. And that was when I fell in love with Mandy Patinkin.
Ah.
And the commercial was, what was the line? You know, they would show, of course, you know, clips from the show and Evita at the Schubert Theater. And, you know, and then at the bottom it would say, original Broadway cast. This is not who you're going to see. But but Mandy Patinkin sang a line and he never sang it again on record or live the way that he did in the time that they videotaped or, you know, probably filmed this particular spot for the commercial. That's all she wanted. Not much to ask for. And the way that he did it was like, oh, who is this guy?
Yeah.
I want to be him. And so, you know, that became my favorite until then I discovered Jesus Christ Superstar maybe, you know, a year later and fell in love with that.
And how old would you have been at this point?
That was freshman year in high school. And I remember that aforementioned Stephen Page, he loaned me his Evita on vinyl. And I went back home and made a cassette copy of it and played it nonstop. Oh, What a Circus, I still think is, I think there's great songs in Evita. Mm. Some clunkers, it gets a little redundant, yeah. As all Lloyd Webber stuff does.
I don't know if I've ever listened to Evita, honestly. I will check
it
out.
I thought this show was about theater.
Well, yes, but I allow my own personal biases. I'm not a big
Sondheim guy.
Yes, I am. I will go to bat for Sondheim over Weber any day of the
week. Well, you know what? 9 out of 10 would. I only side with Lloyd Webber because of my love of Evita and when I was 14.
Okay.
And as great as Into the Woods is. That's Sondheim, right?
Yeah, that's Sondheim. It's not the one I would have gone straight to, but sure.
I can't think of another one.
Oh, Merrily We Were All Along, Assassins, Company, Sweeney Todd.
That's 20 clowns.
Sunday in the Park with George, Mandy Patinkin, and Bernadette Peters.
Yeah, and listen, I'm on record. I would leave my wife for Bernadette Peters.
Really?
Yeah, I may leave my wife for Mandy Patinkin. I find her so incredibly sexy and adorable.
Yeah.
I would imagine if I ever met her, she's a diva. And I would hate every second that I met her. I would imagine she speaks very effectively. I don't know anything about her.
Yeah.
But damn it. The crush I had on her growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that show, I don't know. There's something about that show that maybe, again, admittedly, I'm comparing everything Mandy Patinkin does, and I've since grown to love him.
Yeah.
To that one, not much to ask for.
Right.
When that wasn't happening in Sunday in the Park with George, when I saw that in junior year, it's like, oh, where's that guy?
Right.
Well, that's not the same role, you idiot.
Have you ever met Mandy Patinkin?
Ever so briefly.
Oh, really?
Ever so briefly. He was doing a show at the Ravinia in Chicago. He was doing it was just him and his pianist. I want to say Paul Ford, if I'm pulling that name correctly.
I don't have an intern, so
we can't have somebody look that up slowly. He was doing that show, and I did not know. I'd never been to Ravinia before, and Ravinia has. I'd only seen photographs that it was an outdoor venue. Mm. Well, Manny didn't sell enough tickets, so they put him in the indoor venue.
Mm. He didn't sell enough tickets.
I know, right? And the indoor venue seats, I'm going to make up a number, 100, 200 people. But Ravinia is a garden where they have speakers everywhere, and you can lay out a blanket, and you get your picnic lunch, and you sit and you have a picnic while you listen to these, either from the band shell outdoors, or when they have these inside shows. So we got there. I did not get to see the Mandy Patinkin show. I got to listen to it. Because he sold enough to fill the indoor venue.
Right.
And then he made some great jokes about Jack Brickhouse, who was a broadcaster for the Chicago Cubs. And Manny kept making jokes throughout the show about how the people outside don't know what he's doing. And he said, he needs somebody like Jack Brickhouse here. Boy, it'd be great if Jack Brickhouse was here to do color commentary on my moves. And then he goes, wait a minute, Jack Brickhouse is probably dead. Oh, I apologize to the Brickhouse family. And he's making all these jokes about Jack Brickhouse. So I go to the stage door to hopefully get my playbill signed. And who's in front of me? Jack Brickhouse. And Manny Patinkin comes out for no other reason, and I just happen to be there just by chance. He comes to the door because somebody told him Jack Brickhouse is here. And so somebody goes, Mr. Patinkin, this is Jack Brickhouse. And you see him go, oh, no, oh, my God, really? And then he calls to his brother, Sheldon. He goes, Sheldon, Jack Brickhouse is alive. He's here, and he's alive. And I can now enjoy that scene. At the time, I was so panicked about getting my autograph. Mr. Patinkin, will you please sign this? Where I couldn't really enjoy how great that was at the time. And then he signed my playbill, and it was, it's a great show. Thank you, young man, and signed it, and then that was it.
Yeah.
But I would love to. I would love to meet him and have him disappoint me.
Oh. Is that your automatic assumption? You assume
Listen, I'm told never meet your heroes. Mm-hmm. I've only had a couple of bad instances with that. So I can't even pull those right now.
There you go.
But for the, I don't know. I've met some of my heroes and they've been nice.
Right. I mean, I was just thinking, Bernadette Peters, you know, she's the woman. She's worked with the Muppets. She did The Jerk. She's probably got a sense of humor.
I'm not saying she doesn't, but she's also the same woman that, sings an album of show tunes.
Oh, that's true.
Affectedly.
Okay.
With that little pixie-like voice of hers. So sexy.
Anyway, so...
Uncomfortable. Uncomfortable.
I'd like to ask, getting back to, Pie in the Sky, if you had, the resources, what part would you love to play that you've never gotten to play?
Oh, I would love to play Che and Evita.
Yeah?
I would, Jesus, yes. I almost auditioned for it once just to say that, at least say I tried. I mean, I would never. I mean, I'm not good. Hmm. I can't sing. I can't dance. Nobody will ever cast me in a musical.
Again, I don't know where this... Is that something where, in high school, you somehow got it into your head that you can't sing? Or did someone say, hey, look, Jimmy, singing's not your thing?
Oh, when I hear it.
Really?
I kind of now have to do the Dean Martin, Neil Diamond kind of talk sing in order to get through... something. Like, I've done these Comedy Death Ray Christmas CDs the last couple of years where I sing a song on there. And even there, I in between takes, I need to be reminded, you're a comedian. It's okay if it's fun. You're not a guy who's blessed with a voice. And I don't know. I'm not good. I'm not. I sing, I'm flat. When I sing, I'm flat. Why, do you have a role for me? I'm a good singer.
Well, I find it interesting where, because I've talked to a couple of people that have gotten in, had a formative experience where someone was able to convince them that they weren't a good singer, and then later in their life they found out, I'm not that bad. This person sort of sabotaged me.
Really, obviously I couldn't have been horrible, because I did get solos in high school. Mm-hmm. I think being in the band, we went from being kind of a classic rock band to being a heavy metal band. Mm. When our guitarist left and we got another guitarist. So this tenor, even at the time, would have been a strong word. I was obviously a bass, a baritone, trying to sing Rob Halford's Judas Priest songs, and I'm screaming, and I think I may have blown out my vocal cords. So now I kind of don't, I can't hit any notes. If I do karaoke, if I sing Billy Ray Cyrus, I'm okay. Or Toby Keith, if I sing something low,
Well, I'll tell you, when you're singing and doing a Mandy Patinkin impression, you sound fine.
It's not bad, right?
Exactly. What's the trouble with the world today?
Well, trouble with the world today is plain to see, is coffee and a cardboard cup.
Like, oh, man,
the trouble with the heaven, the society, is coffee and a cardboard... Everybody says coffee! Everybody says coffee! Everybody says coffee and a cardboard cup!
See, that's great. But the acoustics in here aren't even so good.
They're not, but who wants to hear that guy?
Well, all right.
If I sang if I did a half-assed Manny Patinkin impression at an audition for Evita, oh, what a circus, oh, what a show! I mean, I would love it.
There you go.
So one day I'll get rich enough where I'll have a vanity project where I cast myself as Che, and then I cast everybody around me as great. Mm-hmm. And then, so at least when the reviews come out that, hey, the show is awful because Pardo stinks, I'll know going in that was the concept.
All right. Well, so then what's a part that you have gotten to play that you enjoyed the most, that you found especially rewarding?
No, oh, I don't know.
No.
Boy, that's a great question.
Or you had the most fun with, let's say.
Well, you know, I did a bunch of community theater. I did played Against Sam, and I played the lead role, the, you know, the Woody Allen part, Allen something.
It's Allen something.
I think that was 1987, might have been 88. I loved that role. That was a good role for me. You know, I didn't do a Woody Allen impression, which all the local newspapers raved about that. Finally, I played Against Sam where the actor's not doing a Woody Allen impression. I may have been doing a really bad Woody Allen impression, but it worked, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I love that role. I also did a part in Bleacher Bums, which I enjoyed doing in community theater. I kind of became part of the stable on the south side of Chicago in 87, 88, and it might have bled a little bit into 89. Where I was part of this, the South Suburban Theater Guild, I think is what they were called. And I ended up doing, in my first role was like four lines, and then I eventually started getting the leads. But it's community theater, you know, the other actors are, you know, mechanics and secretaries, and every now and then you had another, you know, somebody that was truly trying to pursue a career in acting. So, you know, it was fun.
So then what was the time frame there? Where was that? Did you go to college? Did you do any theater in college?
I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Ah, oh, of course. Okay.
Which, of course, sounds way more important than it is.
Right.
In fact, on an upcoming episode of my podcast, Adam Scott is our guest.
Oh.
And Adam also went to the Academy. And we talked about how it, while we enjoyed it and it was helpful, that maybe it was just kind of a place that wanted our money. So I went there. I went to high school. I graduated high school in 84. I started the Academy in 86, so I kind of took 2 years off. Managed record stores. Didn't do much of anything. I didn't do any sort I don't think I did any performing in those years. I think I just was busy working at the record store and having that great job. I mean, that was a great job for a kid that age. And then it was like, nah, you know what? I'm going to audition to go to this academy. You know, I'm not going to college. I chose not to go to college. So then I went to I moved from Chicago to Pasadena to go to the academy. Spent a year there. I was immature. I thought I was being mature. I thought I was a guy who was 2 years out of high school and a man who managed record stores and who was, living life. Going to school with a bunch of people fresh out of high school. So they all had that high school cliquey vibe. And I was very immature. Fought with the teachers. Thought I was being a man, standing up for myself instead of embracing the knowledge or the information they could have given me. I did not go back a second year. Kind of mutual decision. They didn't want me, and I mean, I think I would have gone back had they said yes. I probably would have went, yeah, this is what you do. I'm not going to college. I'll do this. I don't think I wanted to go back. I didn't, taking a dance class was not helpful to the roles I think I was going to be getting in show business. and then doing Shakespeare, you know, we were learning Shakespeare. And again, I was very immature and was like, well, this isn't helping me. Yeah. I mean, why am I learning Shakespeare? I don't need to know that to do a spot on Family Ties, you know what I mean?
All right.
So
is that how they couched the entrance into the program? Like, this will prepare you for, you know, movies and TV.
Yeah, yeah. No.
No.
No. Let's be fair to them. Let me be fair to them. They may have been snooty about television and film. They loved using those people to lure you in. You know, Robert Redford and whoever else had been there at the time. I can't think of any of the, maybe Kirk Douglas. Like famous people that had gone to the academy, they loved using them as marquee value to look who else is came here. And but once you got there, it was pretty snooty, the theater. You know, this is where you know. I do remember, in fact, I got yelled at one day so bad. You know, I wish I could pull the actor's name, or I'm sorry, the teacher's name. It kind of happened twice. A woman named Diana Stevenson said it to me, and then another gentleman said, you are a performer. You're not an actor. You get out of this room, and you come back when you can learn how to act. Mm. And I walked out going, what the fuck? I'm getting you know, I'm getting laughs. I'm doing what I need to do, and you know, again, maybe somewhat immaturely, you know, I'm getting laughs. I'm doing, but maybe I'm hamming it up. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm performing, and I'm not being in the moment, and I'm not interacting. Maybe I'm going. I don't know. I don't remember what was going on in my head. I just remember thinking, well, I'm getting a reaction, so I must be doing something right. Maybe I wasn't. Yeah. So I would fight them. And so then I moved back to Chicago, which was supposed to be temporarily because I left all my furniture and everything here in Pasadena. I left it with a roommate saying, you know, I'm gonna go back for the summer. I got a little homesick, I admit that. I'm going to go back for the summer. I'm going to come back out in the fall and pursue show business. And then I moved back 8 years later. I moved to L.A. in 95. So, you know, somebody right now is enjoying the furniture that I left behind. And then I started stand up in I started doing some open mics in 88, and then I did the community theater from I moved back in 87 from 87 to 89. Like I said, I did that.
So there was crossover. You were doing community theater and stand up.
Yes, in fact, I was doing some open mics at the same time that I was doing my last couple of plays, and then I went back and did a show for that guild. In like 91 or 92, I went back and under the... I'm guessing they thought that my newfound fame, which was nothing, would help sell tickets, and I don't think it did. No. But I went back and they, you know, Jimmy Pardo returns! Hey. And it was a play called The Gazebo. It was a fun play.
Yeah.
And I was the lead. And, so, you know, it's not like I was not really cast. It was a fine role for me. You know, comedic show, and... but I don't think anybody cared that the great Jimmy Pardo was returning. I was not so great. I was nobody.
Well, hey, you had those positive notices from Played Against Sam.
Yes, I did, sir. Yes, I did.
Since your experience in Pasadena, have you developed any different appreciation for Shakespeare, or is it just it's not your thing?
The most Shakespeare I probably have seen since then was Shakespeare in Love. I mean, I really...
All right.
Nah. I'm too... You know what? Maybe I would. I don't know. Maybe my palate has changed. But I remember at the time just not being interested at all, and maybe that bleeds over.
Right.
To today.
Well, if it feels like a chore, then yeah, you're not going to embrace it.
But... Yeah, but would I... That's interesting. Would I... If I was to go to... If somebody... My wife came and said, let's go see... Hamlet or King Lear, would I enjoy it or would I want to strangle every moment, every person that's on that stage? Thou nature art my goddess. I don't, obviously, I have nothing but respect for the bard.
Right, right. Well, I had posed this question to you in an email.
Yes.
And it was up in the air whether or not we'd address it. But if that situation came, where someone came to you and said, Jimmy Pardo, I want to produce a show, a musical of your choosing, and I want to cast all comedians or just whoever you like, what show do you pick and how do you cast it? Who do you pull? I mean, do you do that Evita production?
I got to do that Evita, right? I mean, I gotta do the dream gig. I got to do Evita. I, of course, am in the role of Che, given. Who do I put as Ava Perone? I don't ever have to have a sex scene, so you don't have to go that. I don't know. You know, I always said if I ever got to cast something, I would cast Diane Franklin as my romantic partner.
All right.
Do you remember Diane Franklin from...
From One Day at a Time.
No, that's Bonnie Franklin.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Why would I cast Bonnie Franklin?
She might have hidden talent.
Some creepy... She said she was in Company, speaking of Company.
Hey, there you go.
She was good in it. Yep. No, wrong. She was in Applause.
Applause. Oh, right. Beth Howland was in Company.
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow, what was Polly Holiday in? Is that her name?
I don't know, but Polly Holiday, yeah. Beth Howland and Charles Kimbrough were in Company.
I don't know who Charles Kimbrough is.
He played Jim on Murphy Brown.
Yes, very good.
Yeah.
So
you've got this cast of Evita. It's all 70s TV icons.
Yeah, okay, all right. So then I put in Juan Perón, obviously I use Henry Winkler.
Okay.
If we're going to go all 70s. you know what? Do I go with Val Bertinelli in the role of Ava Perón? She can't sing. Can she sing? I don't know if she can sing or not. I can't sing.
Yeah.
That's not a prerequisite for this show. Boy, that's a. I wish I would have done my homework on this. I apologize.
No, hey, I threw it out there. I thought.
Yeah,
I,
you know what? But it was my own. I got upset.
I thought you'd come in with like, yeah, I do Guys and Dolls, and I'd be Nathan Detroit, and Paul F. Tompkins is Guy Masterson.
Yes, of course Bamford, you thought I would do that. Yeah, well. That's a good. That's good casting.
By the way. Yeah.
I did audition for Guys and Dolls once.
Really?
On the South Side of Chicago in a community theater, and I will admit that at the callback, I was a kid. Just out of high school. That was the one thing I did. I got so overwhelmed, I lied and said, I can't do this audition. I just got called to star in Caddyshack 2. By the way, Caddyshack 2 was not even a thought at that moment. But I panicked, and I had to make them think, I'm not leaving because I'm scared.
Right.
I'm leaving because I'm moving on to better things, which was me, you know, getting in my car with, you know, the weight off my shoulders of, oh, I don't need to. So, yes, I did, to go back, I did get stage fright that time. Oh, man, did I.
Yeah.
And it was the callback. You'd think I would have been, like, had some confidence. But I, again, I think because something was on the line, it wasn't just. Back to this casting thing. I've let you down because I should have. Again, I got obsessed about something else on the internet, which is not worth going into. But so that took my time of being a nut borrowers. In fact, it would have been fun to cast a Vito with 80s, like 80s rock stars,
yeah.
Or a Vito with 70s television stars. That would have been fun to do,
yeah.
And I've let you down.
Hey, I'm
and
not
I feel like I've let myself down.
You drove to the valley, that's all I ask of anybody.
I think I may have had to stop for gas on the way here. That's how far away. I live way south.
Oh, boy. I'm sorry if it was an inconvenience. I do appreciate
it.
This
is fun!
Yeah. I mean, you're. Let's see. The podcasting luminaries I've had on the show. There's you. There's Jackie Cation. Mm-hmm. I've had the guys from Battleship Retention.
Those are nice guys.
Yeah.
As is Jackie. Jackie's terrific.
Yeah, she was here last week, and we sat at this very table. And it. I'm not going to say it was as rewarding an experience as sitting here with you, but it was definitely among my best interviews.
Well, I think you do a great job. And this is a weekly show.
It's whenever I can get a guest.
Attaboy.
So. This is probably going to get posted tonight. This is Thursday the 13th. What do you have coming up? Where can people see you? Where can people check you out?
I'm going to be in Chicago doing Never Not Funny Live. My podcast will be live in Chicago, January 22nd at the Congress Theater. ChicagoCongress.com, I believe, is the place to go for tickets. I'm going to have comedian Mike Toomey as a guest. And Chicago radio legend Gary Meyer is kind enough to come on and be on with us. If you're from Chicago, that means a big thing. I grew up idolizing this guy. Mm. And the fact that he is willing to come on my show, I was on his yesterday promoting this via a telephone interview, which are rough, but it went well. It's fascinating to get to a place in my career where I'm able to have what may have been one of the guys that formed my comedy mind. Like, I'm going to be able to have him on my show, and I'm kind of geeking out a little bit about it, so much so that I'll probably fail when he comes on the show, and I'll panic and try too hard.
Well, that's been my mentality today, so.
I thought you were great!
Well, thank you.
Is it over?
Well, I know that you have some place to be. You're a busy man.
We got time?
We got time? Okay.
Whatever, I mean.
All right. Yes. I mean, I usually do plugs at the end. I'm outside the box in that way. But you know what? This will be good, because the people who thought that the plugs meant, oh, it's over, and they just tune out. Now we can have a little more.
I will also, let me get it in, San Francisco Sketch Fest on the 29th, Never Not Funny Live.
Mm-hmm.
It's me and my co-host Matt Belknap and the third chair, Pat Francis, and then actor David Koechner will be joining us there.
Oh, big fan of David Koechner.
He's terrific.
He's one of those guys that he did a year on Saturday Night Live.
Right?
And that was the best year of that show. I'm going to go out on a limb. I realize you're from a different era, maybe.
No. I will. I don't know if I'll go as far as say it was the best year. I will say that, and this is prior to me knowing David Koechner, or knowing any of these folks that I know, you know, now. Pat Francis and I were roommates at the time. What was that, 95?
95 to 96.
And he did the character T-Bone.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always bury it as one of the last two sketches. And we were always like, this guy's the funniest guy in the cast. And this is the greatest character. Why do they keep burying this character?
Yeah.
And so then to see Dave's success, and now to get to that I know him, it's neat to and to then be able to say, we loved you.
Yeah.
We would lonely, drunkenly watch you.
He did that character. He did Lucian Callow and Fagin with Mark McKinney.
Yes.
Loved those guys. That was the year it was Norm MacDonald doing Update. They had Nancy Walls, Cherry O'Terry, Molly Shannon. It was the first year with Will Ferrell, but I'll let that slide. Great
what
year.
What does that mean? What do you mean to let that slide?
You're
not a Will Ferrell fan?
According to all accounts, he's the nicest guy ever, and I find that easy to believe. I'm not a fan of his performing. I could go on at great length, but I don't want to burn any bridges.
I can't believe you've said that much.
Okay. Here's the thing that I get from Will Ferrell. I get from Will Ferrell a constant sense that he needs people to like him. And that's not something that I find appealing in a performer.
Oh, Jesus, then what do you like about me?
Oh.
Honest to God.
Well, you conceal it.
Aha! I think, don't we all need to be, isn't the whole reason for doing this?
Well, I compare it to so Dan Aykroyd in the early years of Saturday Night Live. They're out on DVD now. I was watching those. This is a guy, Dan Aykroyd, he had such confidence in the material.
He didn't care.
He didn't need people to like him.
Right.
He just said, this is something that I think is funny. Here it is. And I don't get that from Will Ferrell.
I hear what you're saying. I think he's terrific.
Okay.
And,
lots of people do. People adore him. And he surrounds himself with great... he surrounds himself with great casts. I've seen more Will Ferrell movies because they've been full of other people that I love than any other performer I can think of. I just... You know.
I did go through, and I will admit, because it's public knowledge on my podcast, I went through my I hate Will Ferrell phase. I will admit, where I people quoted me, and maybe to him.
Ugh.
Oh, Will Ferrell has a new movie. What wig is he going to wear in this one? and then I have come to appreciate him. I think the Robert Goulet thing is ridiculously funny.
Yeah.
Anchorman's funny.
Well, there you go. Anchorman's full of hilarious people.
Yes.
And, part of it is, in that year, I became such a fan of David Koechner that when he wasn't back the next year and Will Ferrell was, maybe I kind of held it against Will Ferrell.
But Will Ferrell was the star. He was the breakout. When he did the thing about get off the roof.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But
he did that once, and he did that cheerleader six times. So this isn't the conversation that I wanted to have.
I apologize.
I don't want it to be about me.
I want it to be. I like to learn about people.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Talking about Will Ferrell, David Koechner, Saturday Night Live, those are primarily people that come from an improv background. Have you ever done any improv?
I went to the Players Workshop of Second City right out of high school. That is when I just said I didn't do any performing after high school in between. I lied. I went to Players Workshop and I did two sessions there before I moved to the Academy, or moved to Pasadena to go to the Academy. I went on Friday nights. And it was on the north side of Chicago. I lived on the south side. I drove all the way up into the city by myself. At the time, everybody was amazed that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
That was maybe the first couple times I was ever drunk. Mm. And because I would go out, I was 19, and the rest of the people in my class were over 21, and they would always go to a place called Deja Vu, which was the bar next door, I would get in because it would be like, hey, the Second City people are here.
Yeah.
And I'd walk in with them and get hammered and then drive my Fiero back home. And there are times to this day where I will think about driving home and not know how I got home. Yeah. I can't believe that I made it home safely without killing myself or anybody that drunk. You know what I mean? but I was 19, having fun.
Yeah.
And I did learn a lot from those 12 weeks of Players Workshop at Second City. So I think I may have learned more there than I did at the Academy because I was so, not interested in Shakespeare or more interested in being an asshole, know-it-all, who wanted to fit in. Everything it's a paradox.
Yeah.
People are it's full of contradictions. Wanting to be liked, but wanting to be the... just a nauseating time in my life. But I learned a lot from that, from Players Workshop of Second City.
Okay.
So yes, I did do that.
Do you remember who any of your teachers were there?
Something Morgan, some woman named Judy Morgan.
Judy Morgan?
Judy Morgan. and who will occasionally show up in a Second City book as like in photographs, mm-hmm. where you know, cast of, you know, George Wendt or Elliot Gould. I'm making up names.
Right.
Robert Klein and Judy Morgan. Like, she's in those photographs. And then there was a gentleman who taught me the next time. And I may have learned more from him than from Judy. But I liked Judy. I thought she was really nice. And it was, she was the perfect, you know, that was 101, improv 101. Yeah. So she was the perfect woman for a guy that had never done improv. She was the perfect woman to introduce me to the format and to, you know, for me to have learned from the first time.
Yeah.
Did you go there? Is that why you asked?
Well, for the brief period of time when there was a Second City in Cleveland,
yes,
I went to that. I was in the last graduating class before the place went apart completely.
Okay.
I have a lot of friends who moved from Cleveland to Chicago and got involved with Second City there as well.
Okay.
I have some friends here who are involved with the Second City, either in teaching or taking classes there. So, yeah, there I was very much a Second City company man for a long time.
I see.
Yeah.
And you are not now?
I'm less so. I benefited a whole lot from that experience, and I've done a lot of improv.
Uh-huh.
So my Second City training transferred over to, like, you know, other different improv.
Did you do stuff at the UCB? Have you gone down that?
I've seen shows there. I have not gotten involved yet. I'm still settling.
Very good.
As you can see, my roommate just moved out. It's changed my financial situation. Things are going to...
Sure.
Things still have to shake.
You'll make it work. I feel confident. The UCB, when I saw ASCAP for the first time,
mm-hmm.
At the UCB, I could not believe that improv could be done that well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was I blown away by watching these guys take a kernel and not go for the dick joke every time, which is so easy to do in improv. You know, this long form, I cannot speak, you know, I have not seen a Second City show, in 20 years, so I do not know what they're doing. I do not want to say the UCB is the only and best way. I don't know what anybody else is doing. But when I saw this, it was like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
These guys are great. This is the cream of the crop.
Yeah. Well, that's one of my goals for the new year, is to get out to the UCB more and just more involved.
Yeah.
I want to ask you one more thing. We got a little bit of time.
We do. Go.
You talk about the teacher that lent you his recording, his on vinyl of Superstar, right?
Of Evita.
Evita, I'm sorry. It sounds like then, because you have a pretty thorough knowledge of musical theater, am I right?
I have a knowledge of the musical theater I like.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? I couldn't pull a sauna, you know what I mean, other than Into the Woods. I couldn't pull, I mean, I push came to shove, maybe Company, or even Sweeney Todd, which I enjoy. I couldn't pull that. I have a knowledge of musical theater I like.
So is this because you went and sought out things, or is it just stuff you've been exposed to and it stuck with you? Because I went through a period in high school where I went to the library every other day and got another soundtrack album and
did
listened to
really?
It.
Did you
really? Yeah.
Good for you.
Well, you know.
I was too busy. I sound like a broken record. In high school, I was too busy trying to be liked.
Mm.
And I wish I would have just, you know, gone to the library and gotten more of those soundtracks, you know, and did what you did.
Yeah.
I mean, you're much younger than me. I would have had to, you know, rent a Victrola. You know, I was introduced to that stuff. I mean, Evita, and what else did we... Was I introduced at that time? But I think I only got into Superstar because of, you know, the rock star element of it. You know, on that, you know, with Ian Gillan doing the lead, you know, this lead, the Jesus role on the original recording. What was there a question?
The question was...
I may have just started talking.
How did you come by this knowledge then of musical theater? Like, did you just pick up Mandy Patinkin's concert album?
That commercial. You know, I mean, obviously, again, going back to grade school, I did Grease, you know, those vignettes from Grease and West Side Story. And
but would you ever want to listen to the soundtrack of West Side Story again in your life? Or
I don't know. Yeah. Although I was singing Somewhere yesterday to myself. That's a nice song. And I don't know. I mean, I have a three-year-old son, mm-hmm. so I may... now be going into that world of, hey, let's go see West Side Story.
Yeah. Sound of Music.
He loves Sound of Music. Yeah. And he loves Mary Poppins, and he loves Singing in the Rain. You know, I didn't watch any of that stuff growing up. I was too busy trying to be a job, being a theater, lack of a better word, I was too busy being, I was a theater queer trying to be a jock.
Mm.
You know what I mean? and I don't say queer sexually, I just mean like I was a guy that should have just embraced it.
Yeah.
And I didn't. But I love, you know, so it was, yeah, it was that commercial for Evita, and then that was my first professional show. So then when I learned that Superstar was the same guy, and that Phantom of the Opera was the same guy, when that came out, I did love Chess.
Oh, I love Chess. Chess is my favorite musical.
Is it really?
It is.
I also feel that that's very patchy. I think that there's five great songs.
Yeah. But it's also got a compelling story.
Yes.
That a lot of musicals don't have. It's not just a framework. Okay, we're going to put these great songs, and who cares about the rest?
Right.
There's a through line. Yeah.
And subsequently, it's a failure.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. I mean, there's not. Is there a bigger failure than Chess?
I don't know. Spider-Man, Turn on the Dark.
They're making it. Wasn't it the most sold ticket this week or something?
Oh, this week, but it has to sell out for 5 years to make its money back.
I understand that. I understand how Broadway works. I don't really. But Chess lasted a day.
Yeah.
I mean,
my understanding is that the various incarnations of the soundtrack albums have been consistently popular. So
I will take your word for that.
Yeah.
I do know that I bought tickets when it was going to be here. A year and a half ago, maybe, and then it got canceled.
Ugh.
And I even called the theater. I go, am I nuts? Did I not buy tickets for this? And they went, yeah, no interest. Went, oh, no interest? Your show's going up every night with no interest.
Man.
Why is that the one? That,
jeez.
Right?
Yeah.
It had a number one. Didn't that go number one?
One Night in Bangkok. Yeah, absolutely.
At least top 10.
Yeah.
So here's a musical that did something no other musicals do and had a top 10 song in the 80s.
Right.
And
I mean, Send in the Clowns is the only one that I think even comes to mind.
Maybe Memory?
Maybe.
I don't think it was. I think people knew it and then bought the soundtrack, not necessarily the single.
Yeah.
Superstar was a hit. You know, that was a hit. But yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cats, by the way, speaking of Lloyd Webber.
Yes.
Maybe my least favorite musical in the history of musicals.
Ah.
Horrible.
Yeah, I haven't listened to or seen enough of it to have made a judgment.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Two good songs. But Chess, I love. I love putting that baby on. I like a thing called Romance Romance that Scott Bakula was in.
Yeah, it's two different stories,
that's
right?
It? Yes.
I saw that on a Sunday afternoon on A&E. They had a videotaped a live
show. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first half is like in the 1800s or something. And the second half is not. Yeah, that's a fun
that's
show.
That's fun. That's funny that you knew that. I fell in love with that soundtrack in the 80s. Once I started working at the record store, I would do what you did in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I would listen to all the soundtracks that came through, promo copies.
Oh, great.
And became obsessed with them.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, well, this has been a treat. It's right around the time that you said you had to get out of
your
here.
Goal.
I don't want to feel like I'm chasing you out.
Whenever you're done, I'm done.
All right. Well, I'm going to say that we're done.
All right.
Jimmy Pardo, thank you so much. This has been a delight.
My pleasure.
If you ever want to come back, I'd be happy to have you on again sometime.
Anytime.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. We're shaking hands for an audio podcast. Bangkok, oriental setting. City don't know, city is getting. Creme de la creme of the chess world in a show with